This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
We are back. It's Joy's international news and current affairs show, especially for the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe one country at a time. We've had a lovely little break. Have you enjoyed your break, boys?
I have, yes. Although I've been here a lot doing other things.
Because the part of the Joy family, Joy never stops 24/7. That's Alex is here tonight, as hello, is hello. Paul.
Hello.
Look, a few big thank yous before we kick off. So Miranda for bringing us the hits and Richard for the latest in local news. And also a shout out to Daniel and the gang from What Happens If, who kept our spot warm as we took a little break over the last grid.
Yeah, the seat's rather moist.
But we're back into it tonight, and quite often the images that we see of the United Nations is as a place of division and disagreement, where some countries fight while others try to stop them from fighting. But many of the underlying principles forged after World War II remain and have been accepted by most countries in the world. And tonight we discover how one of those covenants can help LGBTI people.
What is the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights?
How can these words on a page cause countries to become more sensitive to the needs of their local LGBTI communities?
And what implications could these covenants have on Australia's current religious freedom debate? Launching a toolkit to access this UN covenant, tonight we speak with former High Court Justice, the Honourable Michael Kirby, patron of Kaleidoscope Australia Human Rights Foundation.
And also Raymond Rocker, Kaleidoscope Australia's president and the lead author of the guide that we're exploring tonight.
This is Nikki from Canada, where everybody can get married. You're listening to the Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Yeah.
That was Adam Lambert with What Do You Want From Me?
And I love it that the words there of don't give up very much fits with our theme tonight, advocating for LGBT rights across the Asia Pacific with our friends at Kaleidoscope.
And the theme in the music is that they're all LGBT artists from Asian Pacific nations.
Countries. Ah, very good. Ooh, lots more good music coming up. Send us your messages. We love your messages. 0427JOY949 or onair@joy.org.au is the way you can get a hold of us. We're also on Facebook. If you search W3Joy, like us, and we send you news from all around the world throughout the week. Tonight we are looking at the United Nations, and for many people the United Nations is speeches by high profile people on massive or contentious world issues. But tonight we learn about its principles through one of the covenants adopted by most of the countries in the world. It is the International Covenant on the Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, or ICESCA, and it's a tool that LGBTI groups and activists can use to advance their rights locally.
Former High Court Justice Michael Kirby is the patron of Kaleidoscope Australia, who has just released a guide to accessing this important covenant. We asked him why this United Nations agreement had been underutilised as a tool to advance LGBTI rights.
Well, it's underutilised because most lawyers, including maybe especially lawyers in Australia, have never heard of it, don't know about it. That covenant arose out of the earlier Universal Declaration of Human Rights. That Universal Declaration was adopted in 1948, and the two covenants, the Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights and the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, followed about a decade later. And basically, the Americans and the British supported the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and were very suspect about the Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. And the Soviet Union at the time supported the Economic, Social and Cultural Rights and was suspicious of the Civil and Political. But the two of them exist. Many countries have signed up. Australia has signed up to both of them. And it's about time we started to think about how the economic, social and cultural rights speaks to us in Australia. And that's the great value of this resource that has now been published by Kaleidoscope.
So what is the power that this covenant has? What is it able to do for an LGBT group somewhere in the Asia Pacific region?
Well, many of the countries in the Asia Pacific have signed on to it, though they haven't actually signed what's called the optional protocol that gives a citizen in those countries the opportunity to complain about their government for not giving them the rights that are contained in the covenant itself. So the ways in which it can be used are by arguing by analogy from the provisions in the covenant in cases that come up concerning one of the rights that is referred to. For example, the right to education. And we have a real issue in Australia at the moment in relation to the extent to which there should be exceptions in the field of education from the rights of pupils and also the rights of teachers and other staff on the grounds of their sexual orientation or gender identity or intersex status. So issues of this kind have to get back to basic principles. And the value of the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights is that in their areas of education, health, housing, and so on, it's dealing with basic principles. And those basic principles can, by analogy, be introduced into legal argumentation in Australia. And this little guide is designed to help activists, social society, civil society, and lawyers to do just that, to use these basic principles in a practical way in cases that may come up before politicians, parliament, and the courts.
In your speech, you spoke about laws that are in place but not enforced, even to deal with the criminalisation of homosexuality. What do you see as the problem with that, essentially?
Well, that's what was often said, and in fact it was said in the recent decision of the Supreme Court of India. They tried to say, well, you don't need to do anything about this because we don't enforce this law. But the problem with that attitude, as the Supreme Court of India in a unanimous constitutional bench said, the problem with it is that it denigrates people. It reduces them in their own eyes as well as in the eyes of fellow citizens. And it makes it impossible to take the next steps in providing anti-discrimination law and policy that will make sure that basic rights are available to all people, irrespective of their sexual orientation, gender identity or intersex status. So I don't think you can have those criminal laws, which sadly still exist in 35 or 36 countries of the Commonwealth of Nations. You can't have those laws and start prattling on about rights to education for gay people, because the answer that will come back was, well, what are you talking about? That is criminal activity, and therefore you can't deal with those rights. And that's why you have to deal with all the rights, and you've got to get rid of those criminal laws as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court of India in September 2018 unanimously struck down the provision of the Indian Penal Code of 1860, which the British had introduced, including the criminal laws against LGBT people.
You mentioned there India. It's one of the cases where rights have been advanced through the courts instead of the parliament. Is one better than the other? Is there a way things should be done?
Where fundamental human rights are not being accorded, most countries provide constitutional rights that allow people, if Parliament has failed to accord their fundamental rights, to go to the courts and seek redress. This is actually the definition of a modern democratic society, that it has a parliament, it has the politicians, they are elected, but sadly, often, they look after the majority pretty well, but when it comes to minorities, they're not quite so good. And every LGBT person knows this fact, but also many others know it. People of different skin colour, people of different races, people with disabilities, and women who are not a minority also know it. Unless it's sexy or unless it's popular, politicians run a mile. And that's why in most democratic countries now, there is both the democratic way to secure and uphold basic human rights, but there's also a way that you can go to courts of law and also sometimes human rights bodies that can advance those rights as well. We need a multi-pronged approach. And in Australia, where we have been so neglectful of the rights of the Aboriginal people, of women, of people of colour, and of LGBT rights in the past, we have form, and therefore we know that we need effective remedies, and at the moment, in the constitutional sense, we don't always have those remedies in Australia, and I hope I live long enough to see them. My father lived until he was 95, and I've got a long way to go, and I'm therefore very patient, but I hope it's going to be done before I reach that age and go to my reward, which will no doubt be heaven.
Thank you very much for speaking with us, and congratulations on your upcoming marriage. Thanks for joining us on Worldwide Wave.
Thank you very much. It's getting a bit late for the marriage, but we're going to go ahead and do it.
Good on him.
That was Kaleidoscope Australia's patron, the Honourable Michael Kirby, who is launching the guide to LGBTI groups to use the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, which is ISASCO, to advance LGBTI rights.
And there was quite a party going on, in case you didn't hear in the background. So
I think
people
are
very happy about this guide.
I think we heard. Coming up, we hear from the guide's author on what it means for LGBTI communities in the Asia Pacific region.
This is Worldwide Wave.
Hi, this is Tara from the Fiji Women's Rights Movement on the Worldwide Wave.
I'm just a schoolgirl living in a fantasy world. Now I'm outspoken. Walked around for a couple of years trying to convince myself it was a plan I was understand it.
Nikamoya from New Zealand with Youthful.
And that one's going out to one of our listeners and followers on social media, Sonia, who put us onto the story out of New Zealand, the Auckland Pride, can't say fiasco, really. It was a quite very controversial
juicy
decision.
Juicy little story,
yeah. They basically banned the police from marching in uniform, and then that set off a whole lot of other people who then pulled out. All the big sponsors pulled out, the defence forces pulled out, and it ended up in this no confidence motion in them.
Which was a very close vote. It was 325, so a whopping 600 members turned up.
So you know you've...
And 625 voted against the no confidence motion and 273 voting in favour. So it was a close call. Raises that interesting debate around the role of the police and, you know, past sins.
Past versus present. I remember chatting to one of the 78ers at the Mardi Gras parade, and they were quite adamant the police shouldn't be marching because of what they went through.
Yeah.
But then the flip side is, well, haven't things come a long way? Isn't it worth celebrating?
Yeah, it's that debate around pink washing and look, are the police doing it just to, you know, to sort of show their shiny new faces? Have they done enough to reconciliate their past?
What do you think out there? What about Midsummer or Mardi Gras? Should we have police and defence forces in them? 0427 Joy 949 or onair@joy.org.au. Send us your thoughts.
And supporting LGBTI groups in the Asia Pacific region is what Kaleidoscope Australian Human Rights Foundation does. With tools like this guide on how to access the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights and make changes in their local communities. Raymond Rocker is the president of Kaleidoscope Australia and the lead author of the toolkit.
Raymond Rocker, president of Kaleidoscope, give us a bit of an example of how this tool will help the day-to-day life of an LGBT person in the Asia Pacific region.
So the main function we see for this tool around improving day-to-day lives really is around, really we're trying to set out a capacity building guide that activists in the region can use through the UN mechanisms to pursue change. In terms of the impact that this has on the day-to-day lives of people, we've seen a range of recommendations that the UN committees have made previously that have then placed pressure on governments to enact law and policy reform that has, you know, a day-to-day impact. But the other real impact that I believe the sort of Economic, Social and Cultural Rights Committee can have on the day-to-day lives of LGBTI people is by changing the discourse to one that becomes more sensitive to the needs of LGBTI people and their economic, social and cultural rights. And that's really the first step to change.
It seems to have a lot of power behind it. It's been ratified by 169 countries. How can this power be accessed by an LGBT group or advocates?
The great thing about the ICESCA is that it has a whole institutional framework around it that provides a space for NGOs to make submissions to the UN Committee on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, which is an expert body that sits in Geneva that reviews the compliance of every member state of the Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights with its commitments under that covenant. And as part of that review, the committee explicitly asks for submissions from NGOs, and any NGO can make a submission. They don't have to be, you know, an official member of the Economic, Social and Committee of the UN. They don't even have to be a registered organisation. Once the NGO makes that submission, the committee will consider it. And we've often seen that where a recommendation has been made in a particular NGO report, that has found its way into the recommendations of the committee. So there's that sort of...
This is the shadow report.
This is the shadow report process, or the parallel report process, as it's often called. That's a really powerful tool. So we've worked with organisations, for example, around the Asia-Pacific region to submit a range of parallel reports to this committee and to a range of other committees under other international human rights treaties. And they actually do make a real impact. One of the really surprising things we saw is that often not that many NGOs make submissions to these committees. Often they might not know about the process, or they might not have the capacity to make submissions around the process. And so, you know, we, for example, in the case of the Republic of Palau in the Pacific, they had their three-yearly annual international review before the UN Rights Council. And we lodged a shadow report in collaboration with local activists there. And we were one of only sort of five or six reports that were made for that country. And so LGBTI rights really played quite a significant role in the recommendations that other states made to Palau in that particular case.
You mentioned in your speech that civil and political rights are quite often prioritised. Tell us a bit about how sometimes it's about political rights, sometimes it's about cultural issues. It's sort of different things from different countries.
Yes. So The key thing here is that when we think about human rights, we've got to think about them in their cultural and political context. So in some countries around the world, and this tends to be particularly the case in the Anglosphere and more broadly in liberal democracies around the world, there tends to be quite a high degree of respect for civil and political rights, but a lower level of respect for economic, social and cultural rights, which are often just seen as policy entitlements, as matters of welfare, as matters for the government to deal with as they see fit. But in a range of other countries around the world, and this is especially the case in the global south, there's a greater respect for economic, social and cultural rights, and the discourse of those rights, so the right to education, the right to health, the right to family life, actually has a greater level of resonance both with civil society actors and with government than, you know, the range of civil and political rights, such as freedom from torture or freedom of association, that are often seen as abstract, in a sense. So it's really important for activists to read the local cultural and political context when making a decision about what specific discourses to pursue.
In the Q&As, religious freedoms came up as a question. You mentioned some information out of the UN that might impact that discussion here in Australia.
Yes. So one really positive recommendation that we've seen from the UN Committee on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights just in the past few weeks really was a recommendation to Germany around the need to narrow its exemptions for discrimination for LGBT people in schools. And that was an immensely powerful recommendation because it's a debate that we've seen here in Australia. It's a debate that's, you know, increasingly politicised in Australia. And we hadn't seen a lot from the committee prior to that recommendation to Germany. We hadn't seen a lot around sort of how they interpret the scope of the non-discrimination obligation and how it applies particularly sort of to schools that have a religious background. We do know that the obligation, and the committee has said this previously, that the obligation applies to private parties. So it applies, for example, to private healthcare providers or private employers. But we hadn't seen that specific recommendation about how it interacts with the right to freedom of religion, for example. So that was quite a welcome recommendation, and it's one that we hope activists in Australia will, you know, if we don't see law reform in the next few months, which hopefully we will, but if we don't see law reform in this space, we hope that activists in Australia will also take this matter to the UN committee, whether on social and economic rights or some of the other committees of the UN, to try and get positive recommendations.
Something for us to keep an eye on. Thank you for your work in LGBT rights across the Asia Pacific. Raymond Rocker from Kaleidoscope, thanks for joining us on Worldwide Wave.
Thanks very much, Matthew, and thanks for all the work you do in support of LGBTI rights.
And that was Raymond Rocker, president of the Kaleidoscope Australia Human Rights Foundation.
Great guy. Only young guy, really kicking some goals there and helping out a lot of groups. Message has come in. Thank you, Esther, on air at joy.org.au. Esther says, police wrongdoing against queers is not past. Police target queer people of colour routinely. In New Zealand, police especially target Maori queers, and banning them is important for actively including the Maori queer people better. Well done, New Zealand organisers and members, for the majority support. Quite a pertinent, yeah. True.
It is. And, you know, I should have really
probably
said
not dissimilar
that
here in Australia.
Absolutely. You know, as I've said before, the police are representative of the wider society, you know, good, the good, bad, and in between.
You get the homophobes, but also the queers as well.
But the generational change, as you said, is coming in the police, like in most organisations. So we just have to hope that wins out in the long run.
Send us your thoughts, 0427 Joy 949. You're on Worldwide Wave.
I'm Stefan from Taiwan. You're listening to Worldwide Wave.
All I want to get is a little bit closer. All I want to know is, can you come a little closer?
our Canadian sister act, Tegan and Sarah, with Closer. Joy, it's a worldwide wave and it's a new grid, so we're back tonight and we've got new neighbours. Welcome, Flo and Grace.
Thank you. Welcome back.
Now, the show is one hot wonder.
Yes, one hot wonder.
Not one hit wonder.
No, not one hit wonder.
What's your show about?
So, every week we're going to pick an album from an artist that made one epic album, one hot wonder, and then we never heard from them ever again. Or if we did hear from them, it was a bit of a flop. So this week we've chosen New Radicals. Maybe you've been brainwashed too. That's the name of the album. I wasn't asking.
Oh, I was being critiqued then.
No, so yeah, and then we're going to kick off the show with a one-hit wonder from a different artist every week. So, and we've also got a Christmas special.
And how far do you go back? Do you go way? You go anywhere?
Yeah.
How do you find out who's only survived one?
Well, we had some albums in our mind. It was probably like a little drunken conversation many months ago that we're like, let's do this show. And then it's kind of come to fruition and we've got a few albums, but I think we're going to be searching for some more.
Excellent. Or people can message in.
Yeah, now, definitely.
Flo.
Hi.
This is your first time.
It is, yes.
Welcome to the
it's
microphone.
Very exciting.
Are you very excited?
Yeah,
what
absolutely.
Are you looking forward to about the show?
Pretty much making our drunken conversation a reality.
It's just like your own little private bar and having a chat.
Yeah, her and I on the show, you won't be able to kick us out. We'll be in there for hours.
So the show is One Hot Wonder. It follows directly after us, just a few minutes away, 8 p.m.
Ooh.
Every Tuesday night. We can't wait. We'll be bobbing away.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
See you then.
And have a good show.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Dzień dobry. I am Kylie from Poland. It's great to have a place like Joy 94.9, where we can talk about trans issues from across the globe on a worldwide wave.
Now, while we were away, we had a few months off, there were some big issues that came up, big news stories that broke. So we thought we'd just touch on a couple of those biggies, and particular big ones for around our region. First one that came to my mind, Michael Kirby mentioned it in his interview as well, was the India's Supreme Court ruling.
Finally, I don't have to keep apologising for it.
for the removal of the English sodomy laws. It was unanimous. It was completely unanimous. It's actually the second. So for anybody that hasn't followed the story, this has been going on for, well, many years, but really I think it was 2009 when decriminalised.
Recriminalised,
and then there's been a very concerted fight for this to be considered. The Parliament has largely tried to stay out of this. They've been seemingly happy for the courts to deal with it. But for the Constitutional Court to unanimously strike it down, they use really strong language in the ruling as well. The Chief Justice said the law was irrational, indefensible, and manifestly arbitrary. It's really hard to go back from that sort of stuff. So I think...
I think it's a real line in the sand for India here. Who knows? But one does hope that this is absolutely a turning point in the country. And it's been a law that's been so detrimental to everyone in the LGBTI community. India, of course, has a long history of the third gender, Hijra, and they've been marginalised and abused. The police have used this law for years as a way of extorting, as a form of extortion.
Or harassing.
Like male harassment, you name it.
It's interesting because the justice has said that they went further than just saying this law is struck out, therefore gay sex is to criminalise. They also said that gays are to be accorded all the protections of the Indian Constitution.
Yeah.
So this was a real ruling about equality.
However,
cultural change takes longer.
Absolutely.
So
I mean, we are still talking a deeply divided country. I've travelled there myself and I know the differences between rural India and urban India couldn't be more dramatic. But, these things, you know, baby steps.
But there have been some, so you were saying that there was a pride last
weekend? Just this weekend, Ghana saw pictures of Bangalore, had its first major pride event since the change to the law.
And of course, Delhi, you'll find those pictures on our Facebook page as well. Great celebrations this pride, and they said they had the record numbers for all these ones since the vote.
It hasn't all been positive news. I mean, closer to home, we've had the same-sex vote on marriage in Taiwan.
Yes, Taiwan. Taiwan, which we thought, or everybody seemed to think, would be the first country to legalise same-sex marriage in the first Asian country. There were a whole lot of groups that were able to petition, get enough people to sign a petition for there to be a referendum. There were, as a part of their elections, there were 10 referendum questions asked. 5 of them were about same-sex marriage, and 3 were phrased to be negative and 2 were phrased to be positive. All of them went against the LGBT community, and it was by about a 2-to-1 vote. It was quite convincing in the bad way, unlike our one here. However, there's a slight silver lining coming out of this. This vote came as a result of similarly the Taiwanese High Court saying that same-sex marriage had to be legislated by the parliament because it was discriminating against the LGBT community there. So the parliament has been, again, happy to sort of sit back and see how this plays out. The problem is, for the anti-marriage equality people, the court has since come out after the referendum and said the referendum does not overrule the High Court. You can have your referendum. It's very much like a non-binding postal vote type thing, one might say.
Familiar,
or
yes.
Even a advisory one in the UK that came out a certain way.
Yeah. So, look, Taiwan is still very much in this very will-they-won't-they stage.
We'll see whether Thailand maybe beats them to it. I think that'll be interesting. I don't know which
Well, they're still on the clock. So May is still the deadline for Taiwan's High Court ruling. The parliament is now talking about creating a separate law, so not amending the Marriage Act, but creating a separate law. So that's under discussion. We will keep an eye on that for you here on World Wide Wave and bring it to you as it breaks.
Kia ora, my name is Tatriana, and I'm from the Cook Islands LGBT organisation, BTL Association, on the World Wide Wave.
A huge thank you to our guest tonight, former High Court Justice and Kaleidoscope Australia patron Michael Kirby and President of Kaleidoscope Australia Human Rights Foundation, Raymond Rocker. You can find that report at kaleidoscopeaustralia.com, and we've posted that on our Facebook page, W3Joy.
And don't forget, you can always interact with us on Facebook. Now, you can interact with us on W3Joy on Facebook. And also, we'd like to thank for the messages that come through on SMS and email.
Yes, thank you, Esther, for the messages tonight. Thank you to Alex, who also, after the show, does podcasting for us.
If I can remember how to, it's been a while.
How to practice.
I'll be relearning that this weekend.
So you heard there, One Hot Wonder with Flo and Grace is coming up next. Greatest classic albums. And stick with us all night. Triple Bypass, Local Roots and Be There, Done That. Take you through all night and into the wee small hours. Taking us out...
we have some Australian music.
Some Aussies.
Oi, oi, oi.
Wild.
Yes.
It's wild.
It's wild.
We'll catch you next week on World Wide Wave. On Joy.
See you then.
On the way home, you were trying to wear me down, down. Kissing up on fences and up on walls. On the way home, I guess it's all working out, now. 'Cause there's still too long to the weekend, too long till I drown in your hands, too long since I've been a fool, oh yeah. Trust me, wild. 'Cause when you look like that, I've never ever wanted to be so bad. Oh, yeah, trust me, wild. You're driving me wild, wild, wild. You're driving me wild, wild, wild.
bend and break, but I can't turn away, and it's driving me wild. You're driving me wild. You make my heart shake, bend and break, but I can't turn away, and it's driving me wild. You're driving me wild.
Australia's Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another podcast of World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne or online across the world at joy.org.au. You'll find all of our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave. Or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.